You're listening to an IOE podcast,
powered by UCL Minds.
This is Research for the Real World. Conversations with researchers about the paths they've taken to shape our everyday lives.
This is Research for the Real World, conversations with researchers about the paths they've taken to help shape everyday lives. Hello, I'm Dr. Laura Uthwaite and I'm a Senior Research Fellow at the UCL Centre for Education Policy and Equalising Opportunities at IOE, UCL's Faculty of Education and Society. In this season of Research for the Real World, we want to highlight research that examines how we can recruit and retain more teachers. This is because we know that teachers are a key influence upon young people's attainment and outcomes. But currently, teacher shortages are one of the main challenges faced by education systems in many countries, including here in England. On this episode, I'm delighted to be talking to Professor Caroline Daly. Caroline is a Professor of Teacher Education and Director of the Centre for Teachers and Teaching Research here at IOE. She is a qualified secondary school teacher before joining IOE on the English PGCE programme. Her expertise cover the role of digital technologies in professional learning, mentor learning, and school factors that affect teacher development. She's also a fellow of the International Professional Development Association. So welcome to the podcast, Caroline.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So before we go into a little bit more about your work, it'd be great to know a lot more about yourself and find out about how you came to be where you are now. So perhaps briefly, to recap, what is your own educational background and how did you become involved in working in education research?
Well, I was a teacher in secondary schools for 10 years, working in a core subject, English, which was always quite a pressurised environment in terms of the importance of results for young people in English going into the workforce post-16. And I was always really interested in how teachers learn to teach really well and optimise their potential and do the best they can do for the young people in their care. It was always something that I wanted to study after my initial qualification. I always wanted to go back to university and study at master's level, not just theory of teacher learning, but looking at what it means in practice, the differences that teachers can make in a classroom and giving respect to that practical knowledge and skill base that teachers have combined with theory. And I was fortunate enough to be able to come back and study for a master's degree, actually here at the Institute of Education. And then from there, I started to work at the Institute as a lecturer, as someone who contributed to teacher education secondary training PGCE programme. And from there, I sort of grew my interests beyond initial qualification into supporting the ongoing development of teachers in early career. I was fortunate enough to be one of the people who started developing a programme called the Master of Teaching. And that was many years ago, one of the very first programmes in the United Kingdom to look at the importance of practice-based master's accreditation for new teachers and the need to go on supporting them in their first posts. And from there, I developed an interest in how technologies can enable teachers to learn because they are so very busy and they find it difficult to come into universities following a hard day of work in their schools. And from there, looking more deeply at the range of factors and components that can influence opportunities for teachers to learn in schools. So I've really gone through a whole kind of range of experiences as a teacher, initial teacher education, early career learning, and then more broadly teacher development, until where I now direct the Centre for Teachers and Teaching Research at the Institute, which is a great privilege.
That sounds great. And it sounds like, you know, you've really developed such a wealth of experience across so many years. And I guess based off that, could you tell us a little bit more about what you think the challenges are currently for teachers and how that might have changed over your time in the sector, particularly with all the current issues at the moment?
I mean, it's easy to say sort of obvious challenges that teachers face at the moment. I mean, we know, you know, we're in a situation of national strike action at the moment around teachers' pay and working conditions. But I think before sort of looking at the detail of something like that, it's important to say that I think a fundamental crisis for teaching is the professional status of teachers and the need to assert that professionalism of teachers, the depth of their knowledge and the complexity of their skills that I think are not sufficiently recognised in terms of how they are positioned currently. I think that it's really important to recognise that teaching is a graduate profession and that those who enter the profession are highly educated, talented individuals with a number of career prospects, and they want to use their intellect, they want to use their creativity, they want to use all the great ideas that they have and the passion for the subjects that they know about and the knowledge all about as graduates. And they want to bring that to teaching to make a difference to the young people in their care. And I think a real struggle, whilst there is such a crisis to recruit more teachers, is to recognise that excellence and that postgraduate knowledge and the high expectations that teachers bring about finding a really fulfilling career. In times of crisis, I think there is a real problem with trying to ensure that teaching vacancies can be filled by actually making it, let's say, less skillful in certain ways to teach, by making aspects of teaching more generic so that more teaching can be carried out by supply teachers, cover teachers. People can teach subjects in which they're not qualified, you know, whatever it takes. And I think that the whole kind of way of thinking around this does a great disservice to the specialisation of teachers and the excellence of their knowledge. When they are fully trained, when they are given the opportunities to develop and take forward that excellence into their career. And I think it's a really difficult point in the teaching profession at the moment, because there is a great deal of policy around, and you know, some of it can be welcomed towards trying to provide more support for teachers. But at other times, I think there is a risk that some of the support that's being put in place is based on a kind of deficit picture that, you know, we won't be able to expect so much, so we really have to tell teachers how to do their jobs, you know, to make it in certain ways a little easier for more people to be able to step in. Now, I think it's important to provide huge support to the teaching profession and to respect that need for support. But at the same time, we have to respect the expertise of teachers and the fact that it is a challenging job that requires expertise based on deep knowledge. And there's no shortcuts to that. So I think, yeah, it's pretty difficult at the moment, and teachers want things to be less exhausting, but it doesn't mean that they expect their jobs to be in any way kind of trivialised or just made easier in superficial ways, because that's not actually very respectful to the profession.
No, that's really interesting. And, you know, it provides a lot of avenues for how we can go about addressing the issues around teacher shortages. But there's also been a lot of talk around, you know, we should increase teacher pay and decrease working hours. What do you think should be prioritised if we are going to address this issue of teacher shortages and keeping people in the profession? What do you think is the key lever to solving the problem?
Pay is really important, and so are working conditions. There's no getting away from that. And not enough serious attention has been paid to that in recent years. Those challenges for teachers are real, and it's a highly competitive environment where we know that graduates are able to pursue a number of careers, and we need to make it clear that teaching is going to be worthwhile as a lifetime career that can sustain the kinds of aspirations that teachers quite rightly have on graduating university. So I think there's no getting away from that. However, I don't think that's all there is to it. I mean, if we were able to wave a magic wand and suddenly a pot of money appeared to give teachers a substantial pay award and maybe reduce some of the working hours, I'm not actually convinced that would make a big enough difference going forward. Because what really matters is the nature of teachers' work. Teachers have always worked incredibly long hours, and there have been many periods in time when they haven't been well rewarded financially for those hours. But we have never in those times seen the rates of teachers leaving that we have today, or the crisis in attracting them to train to teach in the first place. So we do have to look at what it is about the profession now, when we've been through tough times before, that makes it so much less appealing. And I think that really means looking closely at the nature of teachers' work. And teachers enter teaching because they want to make a difference. Now, that might sound quite sort of a bit of a cliche, but they do want to make a difference. They want to be able to know that the work they spend hours on each day actually helps children and young people to learn, to really enjoy their learning, to find school worthwhile, to find subjects worthwhile for secondary teachers, to make school such a rewarding and fulfilling place to be for the teachers and the young people they work with. That's what makes people want to become teachers. You know, they don't become teachers because they want to sit and process hours of email at the end of a working day. They don't become teachers because they want to be data inputters, you know, or, you know, the makers, you know, of all kinds of advertising and promotion materials for schools to compete with all the other schools. You know, people become teachers still out of kind of ethical and vocational drivers, things where they really want to make a difference, commitments to social justice, very frequently because teachers are interested in those who face the most disadvantage in society. And so I think that the nature of work and the balance of what teachers actually have to do in a working day needs to be looked at really carefully. When you think that a teacher at the end of their working day says goodbye to their learners, being 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, whatever, and then sits down to the pile of assessment, some of which is really valuable and important, but some of which is connected to other kinds of record keeping and data tracking of learners, that I'm not convinced makes the difference that teachers really want to make. You know, and at the end of a working day, does a teacher want to spend another 2, 3, 4 hours sitting in front of a computer screen, doing various kinds of functional, administrative, data processing work? That is what, you know, they could have done that if they wanted to apply for an office job. Only they haven't, they've been teaching all day. So, you know, there's a lot to think about there. It's not just giving them more money.
Yes, there's lots of food for thought there. What do you think flexible working, like, do you think that could be something that could make a difference to teacher retention, in addition to issues around pay and professionalism and respect? So, you know, you're saying that they have to do all these additional tasks at the end of the school day when the children leave. What do you think flexible working could bring to this kind of equation to solving the problem?
I think, I mean, that's a really difficult one, because we both know, you know, there are so many opportunities in so many professions for flexible working. And that's something that's become increasingly appealing, of course, since COVID. And we've learned how well it can work in a variety of jobs. There is something different about teaching, because a teacher's impact in a school is very much related to their presence in that school. I mean, we know the importance of a teacher where there are, let's say, some kinds of challenges that some learners are having on a Wednesday morning. And we know how incredibly helpful it can be for that teacher to still be there at the end of the school day, to pick up on various issues, to meet with learners, to meet with parents, or to meet later in the week with students, to follow up, to be around. There is something about a teacher's presence in a school and the fact that they are there in a consistent way for learners, which is very important for so many of the young people in our schools. That really matters. And I would say, if we want to take flexible working as something that is feasible within a school environment, there are big implications. For example, one of my colleagues, Becky Taylor, in the Centre for Teachers and Teaching Research, is really interested in following up work around timetabling that would be necessary to introduce more flexible environments for teachers in schools. But in the long term, I think flexible working is probably not the most immediate way that we can improve conditions for teachers in schools. We need to make it more possible for teachers to leave school at the end of the working day. We need to make it more possible for teachers to be able to leave school when they have non-teaching contact time, time that is put aside for preparation and marking and assessment and so forth. Those kinds of flexibilities. I think teaching itself needs to happen in classrooms with learners in real spaces. I think we saw during COVID, one of the very few good things that came out of COVID was that recognition of the importance of teachers being with pupils and young people together in classrooms, in schools, and that remote ways of working, teaching online. Yeah, that's great for all kinds of contexts, but there is so much more to the work that teachers do with their learners that requires them being together in the same space, in a classroom or a lab or the gym or wherever it is, in a school, learning together. And I don't think we can get away from that. I don't think we want to get away from that. So, yeah, there's a different kind of way we need to think about what flexible learning could be for teachers going forward.
That's really interesting. And, you know, your thoughts on, you know, these many different elements of the problem and the solutions, it's, you know, it is really insightful. And hopefully our listeners, you know, will gain something from all your different ideas in those areas. So in the teaching profession, there's been changes in terms of how new teachers are trained. And I understand that you've done some research around the early career framework. What did you find as the main benefits of this framework for supporting the retention of new teachers?
Oh, well, this was some research in the Centre for Teachers and Teaching Research that was actually led by my colleague Mark Hardman a couple of years ago. And we were able to research the pilot run, if you like, of the early career framework at that time, which was a framework consisting of a set of entitlements and learning experiences offered to early career teachers. And it was being set up to run for the first 2 years in post for new teachers. And in many ways, this is something we can really welcome because it recognises the fact that new teachers deserve, are entitled to ongoing support in the early stages of their career. And that this is something that should actually be mandatory and that funding needs to be made available to schools to give time for new teachers to be able to learn. And also, crucially, to give time to mentors who are appointed with a specific role to support the development of those new teachers. And I would say that the most important finding that we came to when we were studying the pilots of this new framework was the importance of mentors, that at last there's an acknowledgement in policy of the importance of mentors. That is a person in the school who is an experienced teacher, who is able to provide regular support for the new teacher. I mean, ultimately, over 2 years of the programme, I mean, the pilots that we were looking at weren't lasting over 2 years, but that is what the requirement is. And that this support is something that happens weekly or fortnightly, that it has to be protected, that mentors can't be interrupted and taken away from their time with a new teacher to go and deal with other things, and that there is a programme of entitlement by which the new teacher is observed, you know, crucially, that the mentor observes the new teacher, and that they have a dialogue, a feedback conversation after observation on a regular basis, and that they base their discussion on the needs of the new teacher going forward with reference to what has been observed of them teaching in class. That is a significant step forward in acknowledging both the need for support and the form it could take, and in also putting resource into that and protecting mentors' time to do that. And almost all the early career teachers that we interviewed spoke about how much they valued that time with their mentor. It was a significant change. And the mentors themselves said that in comparison with when they were new teachers, they felt that it was an excellent thing to be able to introduce this entitlement because very few mentors had received that kind of structured and regular support themselves. So I think there's a general agreement that this is a really, really good thing. Other things were not so generally agreed on in terms of what kind of curriculum, let's say, what kinds of themes should be the focus of those conversations, what should drive those conversations that's another issue. But in terms of the benefit, protecting time, giving attention and acknowledging the needs and what's valuable with having a mentor.
It's great to hear that it was well received. Do you think that as it progresses over the next few years in its development, do you think it can make a really valuable contribution to keeping teachers in the profession?
That I'm not so sure of. I think in and of itself, it's got some way to go. I mean, clearly what we were talking about earlier in terms of conditions, pay and respect for the profession, all of those kinds of things, I think, you know, are just going to be there in the foreseeable future as things that really have to be looked at to make a difference. The early career framework in and of itself, we'll have to see. I would say that at the moment, one of the things that our research found was that there was not enough attention to teachers as individuals in the framework. It was very much based on an idea that all new teachers need to learn the same thing at the same rate in the early stages of their career. Now, as someone who's worked in teacher education for a long time, well, I think any of us who have will know that that is just not the case. Any head teacher will know that. Any experienced teacher, anybody who offers a job and takes a new teacher into their school will know they absolutely do not all start at the same place. They have unique journeys. They have unique strengths. Of course, they have things in common because all new teachers have to have met the teacher standards. But there's a huge diversity of strengths and areas for continuing development. And it's just not realistic to have a premise that they will all need the same thing at the same time in the same amount. I think that was something that came through in nearly every school that we researched in the study of the pilot. The messages came through loud and clear that the senior teachers in schools, very often the leaders of professional learning in schools, often deputy head teachers, members of the senior leadership team, they had very clear ideas about how their particular school could best support a new teacher, and also about the challenges of their particular schools. And they wanted these unique environments to be taken into account far more in terms of how an early career framework should be designed. So for example, there might be a school that works with a large number of learners who have English as an additional language, for example. And they already had really good systems in place for how they bring about induction for new teachers so that they can make the most of those language resources that the students are bringing to school each day, and so that they can learn how to work in the best possible ways with those language-rich classrooms. That was almost a starting point for being able to be a successful teacher in a school where a majority of the learners may not speak English as a first language. And those people with experience in those schools were very clear about the expertise that they brought and how they could help new teachers in that environment, where there was actually fairly minimal reference to that in the early career framework in any kind of tangible ways that were going to make a difference in the first term of teaching. And then there are many examples where people come perhaps where they already have excellent classroom management skills, where they were very successful in working in quite lively classrooms as student teachers and really wanted to focus on other things like developing quite sophisticated techniques for developing their subject, let's say. And they would get quite frustrated if the programme was saying, well, we've got to start with behaviour management and everybody has got to learn how to do behaviour management in this way. And saying, well, actually, that's really nonsense. How can we have one programme that is setting out similar kinds of expectations for people who arrive with widely differing areas of expertise? And what about if you are a teacher of PE in a secondary school? How is that different from someone who is trying to teach four-year-olds to read? What are the different skills that you need in management? What if you teach people a modern foreign language? Your management approaches are going to be rather different from someone who maybe teaches drama or who teaches science with all the health and safety that comes into consideration in a laboratory teaching context, you know. And it was just a need to acknowledge that specialist expertise that teachers have according to the age of their learners and the subjects that they're working with. And that is not really something that the early career framework caters for. So whilst, you know, there are many strengths in introducing a framework so that things become an entitlement, which is great, something that's over-restrictive, you know, is in danger of actually not making the best use of the time that has to be given to it by the new teachers.
That's really interesting. So we have talked a lot about the challenges, you know, with retention and recruitment and creating a positive environment for teachers. But can we focus a bit more positive? What do you think what are the good things that teachers are experiencing right now? And, you know, what is driving some of these more positive aspects in the profession?
Well, I think some of the good things is around the early career framework in that it is recognising the expertise of experienced teachers, making them mentors, looking at schools and saying, there is so much expertise in schools. Let's harness that expertise. Let's make it something that is celebrated. Let's give status and acknowledgement to people as mentors. I think that in the past, sadly, sometimes mentoring was seen as something that might be required when there is a problem for a teacher, when they needed extra help because they weren't perhaps fulfilling all the things that they, you know, might hope to. And I think that now there is a real shift to understanding that mentoring is a really a complex expert practice. I think there's acknowledgement that mentors deserve to be trained and that they deserve to hold a special role in a school that is acknowledged. You know, not anybody can just step in and be a mentor, but it is based on experience, it's based on an excellent capacity to support new teachers. It's not enough to just be an experienced teacher. That won't make you a mentor. There is a knowledge base. There's an expertise that goes with it and specialist skills. And I think that's a really wonderful tribute to the work that goes on in schools and to the capacities of schools to grow their own knowledge, you know, based on that expertise and experience within their own staff room. And I think that's wonderful because it's something that all teachers could aspire to. You know, when new teachers are mentored in those ways by experts, I think it lets them see, you know, one day they might be a mentor. They might not want to be a head teacher. They might not want to be a head of department in a secondary school, perhaps. But they might see that there is so much value in that professional relationship between an experienced teacher and a new teacher. I think it is a very sort of realistic aspiration for new teachers to have based on how they see that being modelled by those experts that they're working with. And I think that's a really uplifting thing for the teaching profession.
That's great. So you've talked a lot about the research that you have done in this area, but we'd love to know a little bit more about what's next for you and your Centre for Teachers and Teaching Research.
So that's a really good question. So at the moment, some of the colleagues on my team have just completed a review of quality teachers, which should be coming out very soon. And on the basis of that, we're really interested in looking at how we can most successfully prepare new teachers to be excellent practitioners. It's something that we're looking at. We're currently awaiting some outcomes and we'll find out, but we certainly hope to be researching the kinds of impacts that will be brought about by the new arrangements for initial teacher education that are coming into place from September 2024. We have a situation nationally with a whole set of newly accredited providers of initial teacher education, which includes many who have done this role before and for many years, and also some newcomers and new kinds of organisations, and new partnerships between organisations, universities and schools coming together in different ways to provide initial teacher education going forward. So it's quite a volatile environment. It's certainly a situation of change, and it's going to be really interesting and crucial to see how the new arrangements and the new partnerships work out. Because we know that we have a crisis in attracting new entrants to the profession. So what it looks like, how it is presented to new entrants, and how it can show the difference that it's making to be working with this new system, it's going to be so important in contributing to the general increase in attracting and keeping new teachers. So, yeah, very much with our eye on what happens from September 2024 and investigating hopefully the benefits going forward, you know, and trying to identify those features of the new arrangements that do the most good in bringing about the kinds of high quality teachers that all our learners deserve.
Good luck with all the future projects. And, you know, we all look forward to hearing the different insights and, you know, those recommendations for the future. It has been really interesting hearing about all the different challenges and solutions to the teaching profession that you've talked about. And like I say, especially the work around the early career framework.
Thanks so much. It's been lovely to talk.
You can follow the Centre for Teachers and Teaching Research on Twitter at IOECTTR to learn more about the centre. Some of what we've covered today with Caroline is also available in the episode notes. If you've enjoyed this episode, we have an archive of 18 past seasons. Just search IOE Podcast from wherever you get your podcast to find episodes of Research for the Real World, as well as more podcasts from IOE. And a quick favour before you go, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, we'd really appreciate it if you can give the IOE podcast a rating. 5 stars would be nice if you're enjoying the show, and this will help us to reach more people who are interested in hearing about such important work. I'm Dr. Laura Uthwaite, and thank you for listening.
Research for the Real World is produced by IOE Marketing and Communications and IOE Research Development. The theme music was created by Rob Cochran. Tatiana Sotero-Diaz is the series advisor. Amy Leibowitz is the series producer. And Jason Ilagan is the executive producer of the IOE podcast.
Thanks so much for downloading and listening to this IOE podcast.